Early the next morning, at 4 o'clock, Ovitz's phone rang at the Sun Valley condominium. It was Jane. "Michael has had open-heart surgery," she said. She sounded calm. "He's in intensive care. Can you come down?" Ovitz and his wife were leaving the next morning to celebrate their 25th wedding anniversary on Martha's Vineyard, but he immediately scrapped their plans and took an 8 a.m. flight to Los Angeles, where Ovitz was on the board of governors of Cedars-Sinai. When he got to the hospital, he met Jane and went straight to the intensive care unit. Like all post-operative heart patients, Eisner looked terrible, pale, motionless, with a tube in his throat. Ovitz immediately took charge, which seemed to come as a relief to Jane. They set up a schedule so that someone, either Jane, one of Eisner's sons, Ovitz, or Judy, would be at Eisner's side at all times, able to monitor his condition. Jane went home to get some sleep. Ovitz ordered that no one else be admitted to his bedside, the only exceptions being Eisner's regular psychotherapist and Erwin Russell. A security firm policed Eisner's floor, and Ovitz told them to make sure no unauthorized person got in, especially no one from the media. Eisner regained consciousness at about 6:30 a.m. A few hours later, Sandy Litvak showed up with a press release he'd drafted and seemed furious when Ovitz wouldn't let him see Eisner. Ovitz himself approved the release. When Eisner finally had the tube in his throat removed, his first question to Ovitz was about the press coverage. He was obsessed with the idea that Katzenberg might talk to the press. Katzenberg returned from Sun Valley that morning, and after he got the previous night's box office numbers, called Eisner at home to report to him on a successful opening for Angels in the Outfield. Jane answered. She sounded like she'd been asleep. "Did I wake you?" Katzenberg asked. "I meant to call you," she said, and then told him about Eisner's surgery. "He was fine," she assured him. "Who else knows?" Katzenberg asked. Jane said nothing had been released to the press yet, but key people had been informed. Sid Bass, of course, Michael Ovitz, Stanley Gold, Roy and Patty, they were flying back from their castle in Ireland, Sandy Litvak, John and Jody Dreyer. The inner circle, Katzenberg realized. When he hung up, he turned to Marilyn. "Wives don't lie," he said. "What does that mean?" He explained that in her moment of greatest need, Jane turned to the people Michael trusted most. He wasn't among them. "She told us everything we need to know," he said. Katzenberg left early the next morning for Las Vegas, where he was giving a speech at a video industry conference. He used the occasion to argue against cheapening the video cassette market through steep discounting and giving copies away as premiums, as MCA Universal was doing with its animated feature, An American Tale, at McDonald's. This was a Faustian bargain that threatens the video business, he told the conference, a comment that especially upset Universal chairman Lou Wasserman. Despite Ovitz's efforts to contain them, rumors were flying around Hollywood, even that Eisner had died. At the risk of upsetting him, Ovitz told Eisner he had to prove to the outside world that he was alive and recovering. He and Eisner put together a list of people they considered key opinion makers, and then Ovitz placed the calls and held a cell phone to Eisner's lips. They began.